So as in the previous days, just wanted to throw out the same question. What are the big problems and big mysteries and things people would like to know in the realm of 4DN equals two theories and connections with various other twists, applications, etc. And math and geometry that we've been hearing about. I would open up the floor to anyone who wants to say a little bit. I know Jörg had some comments this morning. If you'd like to elaborate a little, that would be great.
Yeah, if you want, I can make a start. It's not going to be very well organized or prepared. Yeah, what was puzzling me for a while, and still is puzzling me in several respects, is that this context, I think sort of where it started, that was the remark that Lotte made, that one sees some natural line bundles appearing in two different limits, basically, of the parameter space that we like and that we like to play with in the context of equals four and equals to two theories, where we have the two epsilons in the game. And yeah, there are sort of two important or particularly maybe nice limits. One is called Nekrasov-Shatashvili limit. And well, from the study of instanton partition functions as well as their relations to CFT, and as well as the relations to geometric Langlands, this is where we find most naturally the geometric Langlands in the original form of Baehlinson and Drinfeld, in the sense that, for example, we can say, let's start with what I know the best, the CFT. You can start with Wessman-Witten or affine Lie algebra conformal blocks, Nekrasov-Shatashvili limit, when you do the dictionary of parameters, corresponds to the critical level limit. And this is exactly sort of what we learned from Baehlinson and Drinfeld, that with affine Lie algebra representations at critical level, we can explain the geometric Langlands correspondence. And of course, this has received an uplift, or well, an interpretation or a different incarnation in the context of instanton counting, where, well, it's actually a bit more recent, sort of, that the story got more mature through work of Nekrasov. What you need is the so-called full surface operator on top of, say, the usual business of instanton partition function in the omega background. And then what he and Cembalyuk have shown is that indeed you find Knishnik-Zamolnikov equations from the instanton counting proper. And okay, you can do the thing with arbitrary epsilon parameters. And what was known in CFT for a long time was that if you then send the epsilons, one of the epsilons, say typically epsilon 2 to 0, then sort of, yeah, then interesting things happen. Interesting things being, and maybe this is perhaps worth spelling out. You find a leading term which is divergent, exponential of something divergent, which in fact is an action. It's these sort of it's the generating functional of the variety of operators that Lotte was talking about. That is sort of the leading order, and the exponential thereof would then naturally be. I mean, that is very natural from these geometric relations of class S, that this is a section of a line bundle because it transforms with the usual generating functions when you change coordinates. And then the next to leading order, sort of the finite part, would be the eigenfunctions of the Hitchins Hamiltonians that geometric Langlands, or well, the modern incarnation analytic Langlands is all about. So, okay, all this sort of happened at the critical level limit. And then on the other hand, sort of what I think is becoming clearer is something of a similar flavor and certainly somehow related, but I would like to understand better how exactly related happens if you go to the self-dual point. The self-dual point, we find the business, well, which appeared in my talk, and you find the business of the tau functions, but okay, there's a non-trivial twist, right? So you're not sort of, you could be starting with just the instanton partition functions, but these tau functions are not just instanton partition functions, but they're the dual instanton partition functions related to the usual instanton partition function of Nekrasov by this funny Fourier type expansions. And but on the other hand, you may note, well, two things perhaps. So on the one hand, it shares, I think, a key flavor with geometric Langlands correspondence. And I mean, at the end of the day, basically, you get kind of sheaves of conformal blocks fibered over, well, local systems. This is what basically geometric Langlands does. But here, sort of the tau functions, I mean, that's was how I interpreted them in my talk. You can view as yeah, just the free fermion conformal blocks that you can construct for and twist for any choice of a local system. So it is this flavor of a kind of classical quantum correspondence. The moduli of local systems sort of forms a kind of background. And over this, you, in the two cases, fiber spaces of conformal blocks. In one case, fine Lie algebra conformal blocks by the construction of Baylin and Greenfeld. In the other case, it is free fermion conformal blocks. But what I also try to indicate is that this probably this story probably continues, and that you can replace free fermions by more interesting stuff like Fagin-Tipunin and things like that. So that is point one, sort of that there is a kind of, I think, deep analogy at the very least between these two stories. But there's furthermore really direct relations on the point of view of, yeah, sort of types of partition functions appearing. So I mentioned in the leading order of, say, conformal blocks slash partition functions with full surface operator, you find exponential of these generating functions of operators. You can also decorate this with other types of surface operators, like the one that Lotte was using. Then you find, well, the story gets enriched somehow. I can go into more details about this, but yeah, well, no, you need the enriched story where you introduce sort of extra, I mean, what corresponds to degenerate fields in CFT in order to go away sort of from the locus of operas to kind of enrich this in such a way that you're getting things which are not, say, supported just on the variety of operas, but which really sort of are labeled by generic local systems. But you can do this sort of on the Nekrasov-Shatashvili side by basically adding surface operators of the other type corresponding to degenerate fields. And then just mathematically, this was and is puzzling me to a certain extent. Well, you have a match between these two objects, namely you have the two partition functions, which each represent sort of sections of this natural line bundle on the moduli space of local systems. And one is the tau function, which is the dual partition function at the self-dual point. And on the other hand, you have sort of the partition function that you find to the leading order, and the partition functions maybe enriched with surface operators at the Nekrasov-Shatashvili limit. Of course, there was a remark when we sort of started this, I think, well, by who was a Sibyok, I believe, pointing out that some kind of explanation can be, I think, found in his work with Nekrasov, the work. That, I mean, is it right? So maybe Sivjok, you can clarify.
That's right.
That's what you exactly refer to, right?
And that's correct. So yeah, the problem is that the tau function as an infinite summation of the Nekrasov function is evaluated at the Staffordshire omega background, but at the same time, it's we want to relate it to the Nekrasov Shalashvili limit, as you said. And the point is that we can think of, so we know that Nekrasov function satisfies certain blow up relations. If you look at how the omega deformation parameters shifts in the left hand side and the right hand side of the relation, you will see by taking one of the epsilon to zero, one of the partial function appearing on the right-hand side, it becomes the partial function at the self-2 omega background. So the idea is that on top of this, we consider surface defect insertion on top of the four-dimensional theory, and then do the blow-up, and then take the Nekrasov-Shalashvili limit on top of it. Then it gives the relation, it gives the expression of the tau function as certain simple combination of twisted superpotential in the absolute to zero limit.
Yeah, but actually, when thinking about your remark, sort of, I was actually trying to understand it along these lines, which I think also has, which should have also a nice CFT translation. But are you sure, really, what you mean is Nekrasov-Shalashvili limit? Isn't it that the instanton partition functions with the surface operators are really taken to the classical limit?
So Lotte talked about the epsilon 2 going to, let's say we are wrapping the surface defect on the Z1 plane, and the omega deformation was there in the surface defect plane. We can take the other limit where epsilon 1 is going to 0, and the effective twisted superpotential is now corrected by the degrees of freedom from the 2D surface defect. And that's what appears in the isomonodromy context. It gives the Hamilton Jacobi potential for the isomonodromy flows. That's what I mean.
I mean, is it okay, or can I very quickly flash some little note which I sort of produced recently when Tudor invited me to some Oberwolfer, because I think the formula that you're referring to is there. Is it okay if you just quickly share here something and we look at it together? So can you see it? So this is what you're referring to, right?
Oh, yeah, it's correct.
So psi is, I think, the thing with a full surface operator, right?
Yeah, right.
And the W variables are these extra variables that the full surface operator introduces.
The defect parameters.
Say the defect parameters giving mm-hmm. the divergence of the gauge field near the support.
Exactly.
Good. in order, I mean, I think it has a lot to do with the story, for example, that Tudor and collaborators are studying these days, when you note that it is that this is very likely, I mean, it's not yet the theorem, related to the coset construction, right? So here's the coset construction, and I'm going to argue that this is just a special case of a formula that we've seen here, this representation of Fagin-Tipunin, mm-hmm. basically, that this is arising in a limit. But okay, if I think I did the algebra to figure out the relations. The point, however, and what I found was that the limit, so the limit that you're taking, basically what you want to do is you want to keep this guy here, right?
That's correct.
Because this is then the Virasoro conformal blocks that give you the tau function. This stuff, in fact, the limit that, and I very much appreciate your work on this. It's really nice. But okay, so these are then, I think, going to be, say, affine the algebra conformal blocks. I mean, after mm-hmm. all, this is part of what you've been proven, that they satisfy Knishnik Samolodchikov and so on with respect to these variables W and Q. However, if I'm not mistaken, really the limit you're taking is as sort of in many limits in the work of Tudor et al. Is not the Nekrasov-Shatashvili limit of these guys, which would give you the Hitchin eigenfunctions, but it's the classical limit where the level tends to infinity.
Epsilon one
going to zero, which is which is classical limit.
Yes.
So which makes the affine algebra classical and so on. And of course, some things I can understand. It's not the critical level limit proper which is appearing here, yet it has relations to the critical level of another type. But Davide wants to say something. Oh, I thought there was a comment or.
Can you hear us now?
I can hear you well.
Okay. Hopefully we did not interrupt. We were just setting.
I was under the impression that there was a comment, and therefore I stopped. But anyway. I was.
But unrelated. So
well, somewhat related, but not directly.
Yeah.
Given that equation, we take the epsilon 1 to the zero limit. And as you said, the singular part gives the effective stoicism potential, and in the context of the isomonotic flow, that gives the Hamilton-Jacobi potential. Using the fact, we can show what's left is the infinite summation of the Nekrasov function as in the type 2 omega background, and that's the tau function. So that's how the two limits are related.
Yeah, right. And I think it is a nice explanation revealing some aspects of the puzzle, but I feel maybe not all of them. So maybe let me add one comment, which in fact I appreciated a lot, which is the way it comes is sort of the classical limit. So you're taking classical limit of the affine Lie algebra conformal blocks, full surface operator partition functions. What appears there for very similar reasons of the appearance of these generating function in the critical level limit. I mean, for very similar reasons, what appears there is also this generating function of monodromy map, right? So it's what gives you, what is generating function of monodromy homomorphism between, say, connections or operators with apparent singularities and character variety. This appears naturally in this infinite level limit of affine Kac-Moody conformal blocks. And then there's something tricky in your argument with Nekrasov, which is you need to package the two contributions which are on the two sides, right? They're going to be packaged into the tau function. There's one contribution, right? So
Comes out when you take the limit. I mean, it just comes out as a result.
Yeah. But you also need sort of a clever interpretation of the tau function from the point of view of symplectic geometry that was in your papers or Nekrasov's single authored paper in order sort of to identify what you get in the limit, in fact, as the tau function proper. But in some sense, what I'm missing there is somehow a conceptual explanation of a relation with critical level limit. So it is very nice. It is very interesting. But I think there are more connections yet to be kind of better understood.
Thanks, sir. Yeah. Sorry, there's a lot in this. I hope I got all this.
decision.
Some more questions than anything else. There's some problems that you know I became a bit more aware of doing some work, upcoming work with Hassan and Faye and Greg, which perhaps I thought might be nice nice mentioning. Is my Blackboard visible? Perhaps if but at the moment it doesn't appear there, but it's visible by people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Blackboard visible. Yeah.
Okay. Suppose the four-dimensional n equal 2 super conformality theory. I could turn on masses and I will do so momentarily, but for now let me start with the CFT. And we know we can put it on a four sphere, on an ellipsoid. No, the form four sphere. So there is some four-dimensional partition function on this ellipsoid, which is related to, if this is a classless theory, is related to Liouville theory, it would be Liouville theory correlation function on some Riemann surface. And the geometry is typically defined starting with real B. But there is a general expectation that this function, as a function of B, could be analytically continued away from the real axis. So if you want away from the positive real B square axis. I wouldn't be surprised if it could be defined everywhere away from the negative real B square axis. I don't know what Jörg would think about this statement.
Are you in the B plane really, or B squared?
Yeah, B square plane. Sorry,
B squared. Okay. Yeah, that's of course right. Then I think there is the problem is on the negative real axis. Then yeah.
That's right. And we can ask what happens to this partition function as we send B squared to zero in some direction towards the origin. And this is the problem of semi-classical limit of Liouville theory correlation functions. Under B squared equal to zero, B squared equal to infinity. And so we expect to see some behavior of E to the some Liouville action. Something, E to the something over B squared. This could be Liouville action, this could be the sort of superpotentials that we're hearing about today. Because this is pretty much sending one of the epsilon parameters to zero while keeping the other fixed. Yeah. And of course, when this kind of asymptotic behaviors, there will be Stokes phenomena. So, there is a question, if I go to zero along some array, which of the possible exponential behaviors will I find? And perhaps I can hope to have sort of good behaviors in whole half planes in the space of B squared. And to be frank, I do not know at this moment if I should believe that the actual partition function on the sphere should have a good asymptotic behavior on this positive hemisphere half space. I could totally believe it. There will be a natural thing to put here, which will be the actual Liouville action in the classless theories. But I don't know if this is a statement that I should believe for classless theories or in general for four-dimensional equal two theories, or if it's true at all. Now, I don't know if anybody has some idea of how to address this sort of question. And then as I vary the half plane, then I might have to find some other things which are in the same sort of universality class of this ellipsoid partition function, that would be different functions which have perhaps which have the same asymptotic behavior. And only to produce those functions would be to do resummation as a function of B squared. There might be other ways to think about it. Again, I would love to know about that, more about that. Now, and conversely, if I look at this function in other along other directions, I might find other asymptotic behaviors which are not associated to the standard Liouville, classical Liouville action, to the standard classical Liouville solution. My guess, which I can elaborate on, is that they will be associated to other real operators, sort of real operators that appear in the analytic geometric Langdon problem. And you know, an argument for that could be that I don't know if I have a very good argument for that, but a sketchy argument for that would be that, roughly speaking, I can find via Zorro, between Neumann and Nam, boundary conditions, and maybe I can try to cook up Liouville theory by putting the Azor bar here, or something like that. I'm not quite sure that this can be made work as written. I've seen various attempts in the literature to make constructions that give you just Liouville theory on the nose, starting from equal four super mills. I'm not quite sure that I would say, okay, this is the one specific one is the best. But at least sketchily, I should put a num here. But in the semi-classical limit, I will end up pretty much having operators and anti-operators grains, and some space, some semi-classical calculation where I'm intersecting the operator manifolds and the anti-operator manifold. And there are definitely also notions. There is a way to think about real operators, things that sort of satisfy the Liouville theory equations in patches, but then fail to be good solutions to Liouville theory along certain curves, certain grafting curves, along which you're attaching different local Liouville theory solutions. Anyway, it's a long story, and I don't want to get into details, but I could imagine that other saddles would be controlled perhaps by the same things that appear in the analytic Langlan correspondence. Perhaps that's a nice connection to make. Then the other question would be, as I said, what would be variants of the emissive rotation function which would have good asymptotic behaviors, but not on this half plane, assuming that one does have it. And also, there's a question, what controls the Stokes phenomena for this object? Is there some kind of BPS particles that could control the Stokes phenomena of this object? I could think about possibilities. I don't know, maybe I need to take the fundamental theory, put it on a torus, and look at the BPS particles in that setup. I don't know. I think it's something that one can figure out. But anyway, so there's a collection of stories about resurgence, about semi-classical behavior with nice relations to various dualities. I think it would definitely be nice to have a more cohesive picture of them.
How do you see words today?
So I can think about this for as a torus vibration. The equation for this ellipsoid is something like x five squared plus x plus z one squared over b squared plus z two squared b squared equal to one or something like that. if I were to reduce on the angular directions in these planes, I would just get something like x5 squared plus r1 squared over b squared plus r2 squared b squared equal to 1. It looks like a quarter of an S3, right? Because these coordinates want to be positive. So there's sort of a map that goes down from this to, how do I draw this? When I draw a quarter of an S2, I guess. Something like that, where one of the circles shrinks on this boundary, and the other circle shrinks on the other one. If I go to the 6D theory,
yeah,
then I might imagine that now then I go down to 4D superior mills on this quarter S2 times the Riemann surface. And then these are now Nam and Neumann boundary conditions. But there's a kind of there's some weird TTC star like situation here where somehow the Nam gets rotated into an Nam bar and Neumann gets rotated. I mean, it's.
I see.
And these pictures are just intuitive, but you know, to do this analysis properly, one had to find some very specific supergravity background here, and then try to reduce maybe in a way that is compatible with some holomorphic, so with some twists.
Thanks. So I guess you suspect from observations that your SRR,
we know that the local operator, the local operators and the north and the south pole, yes, become via Zorro pretty much, or what the algebra, what not. So here there are definitely parallel algebras. These are the this is the corner configuration of Witten and Nekrasov. Locally around here you find Witten and Nekrasov. Here there is a Kapustin-Witten twist somewhere in between, presumably with psi equal to b squared. So that is, you try to do the semi-classical limit, you might hope that you find something going on about brains of operas and whatnot. But you know, there is a lot one could try to say here.
Suppose that you do a Borel transform in some direction. What would this direction mean in terms of the partition function? In terms of the theory, what interpretation do you think a phase has in terms of the theory on S4?
Yeah, it's puzzled because the actual operation of Laplace transforming B squared is not something I know how to give a physical meaning to.
May I try to make two scattered comments? So, of course, there is, I think, a very doable exercise, which for very different motivations I always wanted to do, namely to do this for the three-point function first. What that is just sort of the technical exercise to study the Borel summation of our good old upsilon function that appears in DOZZ. And that is, I think, by now something definitely within reach. It's I think it's just a kind of follow-up on what Lotte and collaborators recently did, we recently did. It's the same class of functions, right? I think it must be doable with very similar techniques. And it would be interesting for various reasons. The reason I got interested in this is simply if you can do sort of it would be nice to prove that basically dual theory is defined by this type of expansion. If you're doing the summation in the right sector.
Yes.
So that would be, I think, conceptually nice to know. I think what would be natural to expect is in fact a very similar picture as in the case of non-compact quantum dialogue rhythm, because you can maybe start with just the double gamma of Barnes, and from that you can either take the ratio that gives the non-compact quantum dialogue rhythm Lotte studied, or you take some kind of absolute value that's the upsilon function. So mm-hmm. would expect sort of similar pictures. And I think this is a very doable exercise. And I would be happy to know the exact answer.
And the two are also physically related in the sense that you can always put domain walls, along the equator of the sphere, which are 3D and equal 2. And the contributions of those are literally given by the Fatiev the logarithm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there should furthermore be a bootstrap, right? So, in some sense, you can insert the Jenot fields. They're determined by a second order differential equation. For this, we know the exact WKB very well. And in some sense, this should implicitly sort of define by some bootstrap type of thing, then the full partition functions. Okay, that's the kind of game I was playing like all life long. I think it's very interesting. I mean, the question I find very interesting. So I haven't yet thought sort of about Stokes phenomena in these kind of expansions. I just mention the two first ideas that come to my mind when you brought it up. However, what I did not understand is the relation to these kind of other real operas. I understood from the kind of picture, of course, you can thereby get something that wants to sit on the intersections between operas and anti-operas. But there are infinitely many of them. So yes. The real question is how do you pick a specific one corresponding to a specific real opera?
And I wouldn't be surprised if those Stokes rays were very, very numerous.
Yeah, that's not yet sort of published. I think I mentioned it another occasion that there is, of course, relatively clear and neat way on how to pick a particular opera. If you just insert on top of this partition function that you drew line operators. And the reason is very simple. If you have then some additional, just think of a Wilson line, you have an additional cosh in the integrant of usual factorization expansion. Then when you with this do the classical limit that you wanted to do, it will shift mm-hmm. the settle point. And in fact, I think I can argue that it sort of precisely brings you to another of these real operas, not the uniformizing one, but a non-trivial one, which is obtained by grafting. Mm-hmm. So that is one way. Maybe there are others, but that is at least one way for sure how you can dial basically which opera you want to get.
I think I agree that among all the things that could have the same asymptotics and could emerge from a resummation, the partition function decorated by lines is a very natural candidate. In a sense, so when you do a summation for solutions of differential equation, you know that the things you find when you resum, or you do Stokes phenomena or whatnot, are going to be other solutions of the differential equation. But here, we don't have a differential equation in B squared. So there is no clear answer to what is the space of functions among which this might be selected as the one that has good asymptotics. Mm-hmm. And find such a physical space of functions might definitely give some insights. Yes, inserting line defects is a good way to produce other functions which are the same asymptotics. Line defects can be inserted on two different circles, right? Mm-hmm. And one of them gives you things that behave like the sort of change asymptotics and the other doesn't.
You're going right. So, of course, the point is, when you go classical, the line defects have to be the guys which get strong. So which are the guys which are sort of represented by heavy degenerate fields in that limit. So the other ones are, of course, the non-interesting ones, which would then just become classical line defects, which wouldn't shift the settle point. But I mean, this is one thing that for sure produces these kind of, produces you a family of partition functions where, we basically know to the leading order, you will find the action, however, shifted to be evaluated on another real upper.
Right. So I think, at the moment, any sort of control on the question of which saddles appear in which calculation, say in this positive real part of B squared region, would be nice.
I mean, I shouldn't really make too wild guesses about. No, I mean. Yeah. Maybe somehow these root of unity phenomena that can, for example, come when the central charge varies between 25 and so there are other sort of rational values, and maybe this can play a role and would be a candidate for where something interesting could happen. But okay, no, I'm just starting to speculate wildly.
And I mean, another way to get the correct connection with analytic geometric Langlands is just to think about, okay, I take my Liouville Piret correlation function and I insert some degenerate fields in it or something like that, right? Then I study the differential equations acting on it. And if I pick the correct degenerate field, the coefficient of these differential equations would be pretty much like operators. Okay, so I shouldn't say Liouville theory, probably I should say now that's Moody instead of Liouville theory to really get the Hecke operators as differential operators on the space of bundles. I stepped the blackboard. Sorry, let me not skip the blackboard. So here we're discussing pretty much Liouville theory asymptotic expansion. Of course, we can study other things like the asymptotic expansion of the sort of analog of Liouville theory associated to Kac-Moody algebras. right. So if we take this as three,
that's just often called H3 plus.
That's right. And you put S2B here with the sort of the maximal defect. You know, I don't know what term should I use for the. With a proper surface defect, right?
Isn't it full in most of the?
Yeah, this is going to be the correlation function, what's called H3 plus for SU2 as a function of B. B squared again. And one can ask questions about the semi-classical limits. I mean, both the B equal to zero and the B equal to infinite limits, which now will be different. I guess
in principle we have a very good tool, right? We have equations, differential equations that we could try to but of course it's going to be technically much much harder than
right. The beauty of the end is, so this is not going to be just a function of B, but it's also a function of a bundle. And I guess that gives you more tools to perhaps figure out what are the possible family of things which can have good asymptotics.
Yeah, I mean, in principle, what you're suggesting is to do the exact WKB for Knishnik-Zomolodchikov, which sounds actually like a well-posed mathematical problem. Maybe hard, but there could even be Yeah, of course, formally, this is probably computed by some topological recursion. And I think maybe in the school of Inna and company, they already even have a description of that. But of course, the Borel summation, then, if it exists, is another story.
Anyone decide we could do BPZ equations, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Once you insert the general field, then you do have differential equations, although.
But one would have to do it in the case where the space of solutions is infinite dimensional, because one has one stepping outside of what is just governed by fusion rules. That is after all mapped to each other by different types of transformations, including separation of variables. So, for example, a four-point function with a bundle, as you introduced, so that is basically a function ultimately of a cross ratio, and then some other cross ratio for the bundle that would be mapped to a five-point function in Liouville theory with one degenerate field. But of course, it's as complicated as a four-point function in truth. But nevertheless, the differential equation may help for something. That is sort of, perhaps also related to what one could call bootstrap kind of thing.
And something I would love to also understand, right, is the relation between the semi-classical limits and statements about the six-dimensional theory and about twist of the six-dimensional theory and things like that. Because when we talk about the way the Virzow algebra say arises from the omega deformation of the 6D theory, if you turn off one of the omega deformation parameters, you will have something, some four-dimensional object really. Because now you have omega deforming only in one plane. And I think that four-dimensional object deserves more attention than we are currently giving it. Is it holomorphic, holomorphic topological? What are the properties, local operators? What can we say about it? It might be an interesting avenue to study the semi-classical limits, sort of go to six dimensions and then turn off one of the omega deformation parameters and sort of try to figure out what happens. At the moment, there has been a lot of discussion on what happens if you turn off the omega deformation parameter in 4D. Right? So if you this half omega deformation, half omega background we were talking about this morning, right, describe the two-dimensional theory with 2,2 supersymmetry, which arises from omega deforming in one plane on the 4D inequality 2 theory. And we were discussing that it has an effective super potential, which is the upper generating function and other statements. This theory has an ancestor in six dimensions, which is a four-dimensional theory. We should be able to say something about that. The four-dimensional theory with the property that when I compactify it on the Riemann surface, you get the twisted effective super potential, which is the generating function for the upper manifold, if you want. Maybe there is something to learn about that. And it can sort of also connect more of the threads in this workshop. In the sense that studying the properties of such a theory is, perhaps something that can be done with the mathematical tools which have been developed in to study holomorphic theories, holomorphic topological theories, and whatnot.
Two quick things related to what you just said.
Yes.
Just to add something simple related to that I think should be related to understanding twists in 6D, and connected to other perspectives in this workshop. There's in a 4D n equals 2 gauge theory. There's now a mathematical definition of the category of line operators. That came up last week. And so the mathematics is by Cowdes and Williams. It was predicted by Kapustin. This is line operators in a holomorphic topological twist, which are the things that in a gauge theory setting were relevant to phase talk. And when we talk about line operators giving functions on 3D on Coulomb branches of 4D theories on a circle, where we're talking, those functions come from K-theory of this category. But I think that hasn't really been done is incorporating this formalism, this algebraic and categorical formalism with one wall crossing, like Kohn-Seyfried Seubelmann style wall crossing and stability parameters coming from a point on the Coulomb branch and UVIR maps is so far completely missing. I don't know, connecting the sort of algebraic perspective to all the other stuff that's appeared and involving limits and asymptotics and exact WKB and so on. There should be a two category of surface operators. The surface operators that have appeared in Fay and Lotte's talks, that it has not been mathematically defined and is roughly the expectation is that this is the 3DB model that Lev gave lectures about. It's the 3DB model on a loop space. So you want to take the loop space of some stack T star V mod G. That requires technical work. Finally, relating to the 60 things that Davide said, like all the stuff and the expectations and the Cowdes-Williams category involve an explicit gauge theory description, but there should be corresponding things in class S. So one would like to be able to write down some E3 category, some appropriate category of line operators and two categories of surface operators in class S theories that are defined not by a group and representation, but by a surface, connect to everything else. That's a mystery at the moment, and I suspect the right way to go about this is going to be to go up to 6D and use 6D twists and maybe go down in a different way. That should be extremely interesting, like mathematically, the perspective of mapping stacks and AKSC theories and other things. I suspect that will play an important role. Do you guys know answers to some of this?
Okay, we're sort of defects or issue, but not upper lessons.
I see.
I have a question about this category of lines that you mentioned by Cowdes-Williams. In general, so I don't understand their construction at all. So how computable is their work? So for example, I take some Wilson line and some Swift line in a pure DN equals two gauge theory. Using their description, can I, let's say, compute the Hom space between such lines?
Yeah, so my student Wenjin's first paper was on how to do that computation. So it is computable. It requires doing some clever things, but at the end of the day, you get either modulus for the 4DN equals two chiral algebras of Beam Rustellian company. So one can reproduce that answer by taking Hom spaces and the Cowdes Williams category.
Okay, cool. So one can certainly try and imagine reproducing that using some infrared calculation.
I was made more optimistic about this whole thing by seeing that one can actually compute physical quantities like local operators from that. And it would be like, and if you had an appropriate definition in class S, you should be able to do the same. Dreams.
May I ask a question in relation to what Tudor just said? So maybe this is what Davide and Tudor were telling me. Just to formulate, so suppose you have this 11-dimensional setup where T star M3 cross Taub knot cross 11th time, and M3 is now a Riemann surface cross braid time, and you take a tangent bundle of that. So on M5s, which are wrapped, which give the gauge group of Chern-Simon, so they're wrapped on the Riemann surface and they go along the braid time of a cigar of the Taub knot and 11th time. If you compactify the Riemann surface, then you get this class S theory. Am I correct?
Yes.
So if you now include, for example, M2s that are related to the braid strands, then they create a two-dimensional defect in that theory.
Yes.
So there should be two-dimensional defect depending on the charges, on how these M2s are grouped and how they're connected to the M5s. And the mapping class group and the braid on that Riemann surface should turn into line operators on that defect. So the question is, how well is all this understood? So for example, when the Riemann surface is a torus, then we get Kapustin-Witten with enhanced supersymmetry. And so I thought the two-dimensional defects there were better understood, but then you need a defect on which you would have the action of a torus braid. So each elementary move there appearing as a line defect. So what is understood there?
I don't think it's terribly well understood from a class S perspective.
Not yet understood, but it should happen in this backwards.
I don't know if you got that one.
It's not homology, right? We just talk about
non-categorical things.
I'm sorry, David, could you start from the beginning if possible?
Yes. So I'm saying if we just talk about sort of not homology, but not invariant, just polynomials and things like that, then the story is roughly contained in this sort of picture, meaning that you can this sort of if you take your surface defect, if epsilon is this sort of S2, and you can sort of put a braid. I mean, you can sort of put line defects on it, yes, which discuss the braiding or the cutting or whatnot. All of these vats are circle inside S2, so that's why you get not invariance, not cohomology. But still, then all of these sort of operations map to just transporting the generic fields in Liouville theory, and so. You just record the fact that, you know, out of the BPZ equations, out of moving in the generic fields of Virasoro, you can reconstruct the Jones polynomials. You get sort of the braid and fusion representation. Lifting that to the homology, no, that is not understood as much within the class S picture.
Okay, this means I can bug Tudor and maybe ask you two about the details of what one would be able to do. Okay, thank you very much.
But it's true that the not homology should appear as spaces of, you know, champaton bundles on some line defects in the four-dimensional equal two theories. Meaning, just what you're saying, you do by doing categorical braiding in here.
Yeah, exactly. Whether or not that's feasible to compute.
This sort of contains much more in the sense that it has to do with things that are going on a Riemann surface.
Yes,
so your strands might not just braid locally, but might do some crazy things around the Riemann surface. And so in that context, not homology is not a vector space anymore. Because it's, you know, you get vector spaces when you study lines in a trivial theory, pretty much. Here are lines in a non-trivial theory. So the analog of not homology is, I have a complicated line and I'm trying to expand into a basis of simple lines, and the coefficients are going to be the not homology on the surface. That I think is a statement I can make reasonably safely. Yes. And if you wanted to work locally, then the natural thing would be not to be in 4D, but to go to 6D and to have something, you know, which is holomorphic topological. Maybe, I don't know what are the possible twists of the 60 theory, I always forget.
You're not a twist of the 60 theory like that?
Yeah, that's the problem, right? I'm a little confused of what, yeah.
So there's a fully homomorphic twist, and then there's one that's topological in progressions and homomorphic.
Yes, and I find it extremely confusing because I'm supposed to be able to put the 6D theory on a Riemann surface to get an homomorphic topological theory.
I
guess I'm not sorry, of course, silly me. The homomorphic topological theory does not know the complex structure of the surface. Yes, so it is homomorphic topological. It's homomorphic, it's sort of C times R4. And so there are lines in here. Or surfaces in here, I should really say. There are surface defects in here, which are endpoints of M2 brains, and
yes,
you can wrap them around the knot in some direction in R4. And, yes. Anyway. So this is, of course, the setup that Witten was using to compute not homology or to define not homology. But perhaps an important, a useful message for the mathematically inclined audience is that perhaps you shouldn't think about the full 6D theory to understand what Witten is doing. You just need to think about some twist of the 6D theory, which might be easier to, to think
that's
about.
The perspective that would be useful to combine.
So you cannot do a fully topological twist.
I'm sorry, very naive question. Why can't you do a Donaldson twist on 4D n equal to 2 gauge?
You can. It brings you to the same place. In a sense, if the Donaldson twist in 4D depends on the complex structure of the surface. You get that by wrapping this twist, by making this interim surface.
Ah, you need one.
So multiple twists in 4D might come from the same twist in 6D.
So you're saying that if I do Donaldson twist, then the parameters characterizing the defect will depend on the conformal structure of the Riemann surface and where the points are.
Yes.
So if I want simpler defects, in a sense, I have to use HT.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes. You want to talk about? Yes.
I see.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. A lot of topological test does not depend locally on the complex structure, although it remains, it knows about topology, braiding, and things like that.
It's kind of counterintuitive, but it must be true.
Yeah, I mean, of course, you know, if you had a topological twist in 6D, then you could sort of hope of doing everything there topologically, but there just isn't, as far as I understand, right? So you can have fully holomorphic, holomorphic, or this kind of holomorphic topological. So this is the place where you would want to understand what Witten is doing all the way to 6D theory.
Yes. Okay, we should wrap up the discussion for today. Thanks to everyone.
Yeah.
For talks and comments. Lots of ideas.
There was a comment I wanted to say, but can I?
Yeah.
No, 1 second. Just to say, some of the things that you care about involve more than the quantum field theory. They involve perhaps the whole string theory and theory. And so this six-dimensional twist sits inside some twisted M theory or twisted string theories. So a lot of the duality, again, a lot of the dualities that one needs to use to make sense of certain constructions are perhaps best distilled by statements about twisted string theory, twisted M theory. And in that language, they might be much more amenable of a mathematical discussion. That was a comment.
Thanks. It's been a great day. Thanks, everyone. We'll sign off and see you tomorrow.
Bye.
Yeah.